So what I can do is I can read our theme and we can get us rolling if everybody's ready to go.
Yeah.
All right. I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. So the theme for our conference is abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our prayer chair, Cynthia.
Thanks, Mark. Cynthia, alcoholic.
Hi, Cynthia.
Take a moment of silence for the still suffering alcoholic, both inside and outside of these rooms. Maybe take that moment now. I pray that I may continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness, to take daily spot check inventories of myself, to correct mistakes when I make them, to take responsibility for my actions, to be ever aware of my negative and self-defeating attitudes and behaviors, to keep my willfulness in check, to always remember I need your help, to keep love and tolerance of others as my code, and to continue in daily prayer, how can I best serve you, my higher power? And I will pass you over to Ashley to introduce our next speaker. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Hey guys, my name is Ashley Patzner and I am an alcoholic. I am reading today from page 84 to 85 out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is a miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is my great pleasure and to introduce Pat O from Fullerton, California. The first time I heard him, it was my first conference ever. And just what a wonderful testament of what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for us. With no further ado, I'll turn it over to Pat.
All right. Thank you so much, Ashley. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my friend, Corey. He sent me a message. And he said he's been on the road traveling, and he said this has been an awesome event. And so there you go. A little shout out to the homie. You know what I mean? And I was trying to chat, but then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I think I'm going to talk here pretty soon. I forget off the chat. You know what I mean? It's like texting during the meeting. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how it is where you guys are from, but you know, if you text the meetings here, everyone's like, oh, there's a texter in our room. You know what I mean? He's disrespecting AA. So it's kind of like the same with chatting. You know, anyways, you know, I'm going to try to find him. Where's he at? Hopefully he's got his eye on the road. He doesn't have his video on. But, you know, I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank Ashley for asking me to participate in my recovery. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely have a love affair with this thing. My life continues to get better and better as I go on. And I'm just overwhelmed with gratitude today. You know what I mean? Just overwhelmed with gratitude. My heart is flowing. You know what I mean? I'm just like, all right, where's the next journey? You know what I mean? Most people around me are like, oh my God, COVID, it's going to kill us. We're going to die. God dang, wear a mask. You know what I mean? Oh, don't wear a mask. I'll wear a mask. I'm like, dude, I'm just living my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I love in the book, it talks about we can go to the most sordid spots. You know what I mean? I got a call from a guy of 11 days. He's like, dude, I'm pacing my room. I'm either going to drink or I'm going to kill myself. Or I said, or grabbed a new guy, we're on our way over, you know what I mean? And people are like, whoa, man, don't, man, you might catch the COVID, you know what I mean? I'm like, hey, dude, if I'm supposed to die from a little COVID, so be it, you know what I'm saying? But this guy needs our help, you know what I mean? and grab the new guy. Let's get going, man. And we sit down with him and we chat it out. And well, he chatted pretty much. You know, he tried to jump in there every once in a while. And I love my life today. You know what I mean? I have a good life as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get to talk on step 10. I'm thinking, oh my God, are you supposed to talk on step 10 for an hour? That's a long time. Am I supposed to talk for an hour? All right, I don't know, but I have an hour, I guess. And maybe it's 40 minutes, maybe it's 45. I think I saw some people asking Matthew questions. That's always never fun. You never know who you pissed off along your sobriety. They may ask you a really awkward question, you know? And man, my sobriety date's October 23rd, 2002. I have a sponsor. His name's Mike Socchio, and I have a home group. And my home group, well, now that we're on Zoom, we meet at 7 o'clock in my living room or your living room, wherever you're sitting. We do meet at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night in Laguna Beach. And if you're ever in the area, please come see us. I love my home group. My home group, its first meeting was in February 1946. There's a lot of history there, and I just love it. And so those three things are out of the way. I suffer from alcoholism, not alcoholism. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have alcoholism today. I don't want to say worse off, but the disease is progressive, whether I'm drinking or I'm not drinking, right? My thinking progressively gets a little wonkier. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I have a spiritual program that I implement in my life to keep it at bay. But like, it's cunning, baffling, powerful, the book talks about. And my thinking, you know, is a little tricky these days. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't really need to call that sponsor guy, you know, today. You know, you're a little, you got 17 years. Maybe take a break from that meeting. You don't really need to answer the phone. I mean, you know, the guy will be all right. If he's going to drink, it's God's will anyways, right? You know, and I say these little stupid little womp-womps in my head. You know what I'm saying? And I have to like implement some action contrary to what my head says. You know what I mean? And that's what the 10th step is about. You know, I think it's important. I was always taught that I need to qualify, you know, and so I'll qualify so that you know that I'm not authority on alcoholism. I'm just a drunk. I'm just a goofy drunk. I have a spiritual malady. I'm weird. I'm awkward. I'm little poopy pants. You know what I mean? As a little kid, like I'm the kid that smells like poopy pants and syrup. You know what I mean? I'm awkward. I'm weird. I don't fit in my earth suit. Some days it's too big. Some days it's too tight. You know what I mean? I definitely just want out of this thing. How do I get out of here? You know what I mean? I'm always running from the moment. I'm trying to get out of the here and now any way I can. I don't like it here. I don't like it. I go, well, I got to get over there. And then I get over there and I don't like it there. I'm like a chronic malcontent. I don't know if you can relate. Chronic malcontent. It's like the people. It looks like, well, think about it. I mean, think back. You're sitting in meetings and people are like, oh man, I don't like this meeting. I don't like those personalities. And oh man, I don't want to drive a half an hour. And then all of a sudden the meetings get taken away and it's like, oh man, this Zoom thing. Oh geez, I don't like Zoom. You know what I mean? So I don't want to, you know, and it's like, I get over there. I think it's going to be better there and it's never better there. You know what I mean? And then I get here and I'm like, well, then I don't like it here. And growing up as a kid, like that's how it was. Like just, I was just always like, if I had that, oh, remember the boxes of cereal, you know what I mean? And they had a little toy in them. And I would get the box of cereal based on the toy. And then 3 days in, I'm like, I don't like this toy anymore. So I'd have my mom buy me a new box of cereal. And like, that's how it was. Like if I had his shoes, everything would be all right. You know, so I get some cool shoes and those are cool for a little while. You know what I mean? If I only had this Atari game and there, dating myself right there, Atari. You know, the Woodstock of young people is the name. You know what I mean? Does that mean the old people share? I don't know. But anyway, so I constantly like trying to get something to fix me on the inside, you know? You know, I know since I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a spiritual malady. Like I understand that. I've been able to understand. I met with a guy when I was brand new who was armed with facts about himself. He understood the big book. He understood his condition. And I'm grateful because he allowed me to put words into my own story and understand my own condition. But, you know, I'm awkward, poopy pants kid at 9 years old. And I took my first drink of alcohol, man. It connected me to you like nobody's business. Now, I didn't drink every day. At 11 years old, a kid handed me a joint. You know what I mean? I smoked the weed. I wasn't like, oh, man, don't smoke weed. You know what I mean? I smoked that thing, man. So elf chasing around the park. I had a great time. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever. I can't wait to do it again. And by the time I was a freshman in high school, I was listening to like Eazy-E and NWA and gangster rap, and I wore size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up, and I had a 5XL sweatshirt, and I walked with a limp, and I thought I was a gang member. Poopy pants gang member, right? Because I drank St. Ides, and I was hard, and I was tough, and I had some gang member friends, and we were just playing the part, you know what I mean? And you know, alcohol connected me to you. Alcohol gave me the courage. Alcohol gave me the power to live within this world. Alcohol gave me that confidence. Alcohol told me everything's going to be all right. Alcohol made my relationship with my mom, that was, dude, was just like, oh God, was, my mom was like hugging a cactus, you know what I mean? Like, it was like there was no emotional relationship with my mom. Like, it made that okay. It made school okay. Like, I mean, there's nothing better than dropping three hits of LSD and sitting in English class, you know what I mean? And watching the teacher melt, you know what I mean? And laughing hysterically, you know what I mean? And alcohol like was a solution for my problem. I didn't know it was a solution, right? Like alcohol, like, you know what I mean? It took me like, I had to talk myself into playing team sports. I hated it, you know what I mean? But once I found alcohol, man, I could take two shots of tequila, man. I'm like, man, I'm the best player on the team, you know what I mean? But I'm a right fielder. The ball's never hit there. I always strike out. But it changes my perception like that. You know what I mean? And pretty much by the time I was 17, mom found a bag of weed. Mom's like, you're kicked out of the house. And so long story short, I grabbed my mom by the collar. I slammed her up against the wall. I hate you. You're never going to see me again. I broke my mom's heart. I left at 17. Absolutely dying of alcoholism, not knowing what alcoholism. Right. Because before that, mom's like, hey, you can't drink in my house. Like, I'm an active member of AA. You know, my mom died with 44 years sober last year. My mom's like, I'm an active member of AA. Like, you can't drink in my house. Like, you need to stop drinking. And okay, mom, I'll stop drinking with no intent of stopping. You know what I mean? All intent of hiding it better so that I didn't get caught next time, you know, and faced with situations in my life, like alcohol always wins, whether that's the relationship with my mom, my living, my space to live, free food. You know, I was already, I had already gotten arrested. I was in juvenile hall for 6 months. The probation officer's like, if you continue to drink, I'm going to lock you back up. Like the minute I get out of juvenile hall, I'm back drinking. You know what I mean? And because alcohol connects me with you, it gives me that sense of that ease and comfort, gives me that power, gives me that confidence to be amongst the other, you know, animals in the jungle, you know what I'm saying? And so when mom's like, you're kicked out of the house, like, that's what I heard, you know, that night. She's like, you can stay here and be sober, go get loaded on the streets, but alcohol said you're kicked out. And when I remember grabbing my mom and slam her up against the wall, F you, I hate you, you're never going to see me again, watching my mom's heart break, that shame and that guilt was just overwhelming, man. I had to react in anger and tell her, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. I hate you. You're the worst human being. A year before, man, I was, you know, or a couple years, I was pledging, I'll never drink and do drugs. You know, I signed the little letter from the DARE program. I'm never going to, I made the pledge. And that day, alcohol was telling me exactly what to do. And I left that night at 17, and I would be homeless from the age of 17 till I got sober at 27 years of age. I was, you know, I was homeless on the streets. While I stayed on some friends' couches, you know what I mean, or their floor, their bedroom, I'd sneak in their bedroom, and then their mom would get mad and kick me out, and I'd burn through that friend, and I'd burn through this friend, I'd get a girlfriend, live at her house, burn through that relationship, and I would just burn through the lives of those that love me, you know? By the time I was 27 years old, living on Skid Row, I hadn't showered in 6 months. I was up for 21 days on some enhancements. I was absolutely crazy. I would see the devil and his troops. They followed me wherever I went. I heard voices in my head. They told me where to go. They told me who to do things to. I would stand outside the Midnight Mission where Clancy was the director for years, and I would judge you for going in and getting help. And I think, man, what, man, rehab's for quitters. You know what I mean? You got to keep going, you know? I hadn't showered in 6 months. I was 98 pounds. I was full of shame. I was full of guilt. I was afraid, and I was alone. I was desperate. My mom would say, hey, I'd call her to manipulate her for some money. And she would say, just go to AA. I'm like, all right. So I go to AA and I identify as an addict. And you know how it is. Don't do that in AA. You better learn real quick. No addicts are welcomed in AA. You know what I mean? I flip you guys off and I leave dying of alcoholism, not knowing what alcoholism is. And I come in and out. And on October 23rd, 2002, I had prostituted myself one more day for one more hit. I crawled out of a motel, sexually assaulted. I had made a promise time and time again, I'm never going to do that again. I always end up back at the same motel doing the same thing I was doing the night before, getting the same consequences. And I'd go to the liquor store at 5:30 in the morning and I'd get just waiting for that. And I remember the guy when he would click the lock in the door to open it at 6, man, I'd get that sense of ease and comfort knowing the front door was open. I'd get inside and I'd get that tequila and I put half that pint down and I walked down the street doing the same thing I was doing the night before, knocking on the same motel that I had just promised myself I wasn't going to go back to, you know? And when I came to that day, I had a spiritual defense that walked right in between me and that first drink, right? Ashley read the promises of the 10th step. None of those promises were happening in my life. You know what I mean? I was in full blown insanity. You know what I mean? I didn't know what insanity was, but I had to be explained. I was full. The problem wasn't removed. I was fighting everything. Cease fighting. I'm fists up. Let's go. You know. But I had a spiritual defense that walked right in between me and that first thought, that first drink. And that spiritual defense said this: call your mom and ask for help. And it was in the voice of it. The voice was my own voice. I could hear it. You know what I mean, it was like, call your mom and ask for help. You know what I mean? I was like, wow. And so I called my mom and I asked for help, and she sent these two goofy dudes from AA, man. These guys were on fire for AA. You know, the guy on fire got like a year sober. He got the 12 golden keys. His life is like, oh man, I love AA. You know what I mean? And he grabbed a new guy and they ran in and they're like, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I was like, whoa, bro, this is a little intense, dude. He's like, well, you're going to AA. You know, and I was like, oh geez. Yeah. AA. That's what I want, man. What a bunch of losers these guys are. You know what I mean? Couldn't you send like someone else, these guys, really? You know what I mean? But the grace of God entered my life because I got off the bed and I followed that guy at the motel. I don't even know why, dude. The guy was loud. He was obnoxious. I know why. There was a loving God working in my life, though I didn't believe in God. And to be 100% honest, I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years sober. I know it's real taboo to say around here, you know what I mean? But that's what happened, man. I came to believe that guy that day that he had a better way of living. And I followed him out of the motel. I made a decision in between standing up and getting to the van that I was going to do what he told me to do because I was out of options. And I got to the van and Jack told me his story. And I'm grateful that Jack told me his story as it related to the big book of AA. I'm so grateful that he told me his story. Right? Easy, like to go through the step workshop. Let's lecture on step 10. No lectures to be endured here. You know what I mean? What we do here is we come and we tell our story. It's a storytelling society. And Jack told me his story. He said, oh man, every time I drink, I go to the hospital. And then John was over there laughing and he was going to the hospital and he was going to the hospital and John's over there laughing. They go to the hospital and John's over there laughing. And I'm just like, this is weird. I don't get it. I don't understand. And the guy's like, what happens to you when you drink? I was like, I don't go to the hospital. He goes, well, what happens? I go, well, I go to jail. You know what I mean? And none of them laugh, you know? I got to Charlie Street and he opened the book to the first page. It says Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. I said, recovered? He said, yeah, recovered from alcoholism. I said, but man, they've been telling me at meetings that we don't recover, that we're in recovery. He said, oh, don't worry about that. We'll get into that stuff later. And I, you know, because I'm like a loophole finder. I'm like, I got to find the problem to this because this isn't going to work. I got to separate myself from you. And he told me, he said, to get back something lost, stolen, to regain health, consciousness, to compensate poor, make up for, to recover losses, to get back oneself from a slip, back to a state of control, balance, composure, to catch or save oneself from a slip, a stumble, betrayal, a feeling. He said, kept reading in the book where it says, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And when I got here, I told you the condition of my body. I was a wreck. But I didn't think that my thinking was messed up. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah. He's like, we have to come to believe there's a power greater than ourselves that's going to restore us to sanity. He said, so that means you're insane. I was like, no, man, I'm not insane, dude. Like, no. And he said, Pat, why do you pick back up? I said, I have no idea why I picked back up. And he started to talk about the thinking that preceded his first drink. He started talking about the thinking that always led him back to drink. He said, Pat, why do you pick back up? I said, I really don't know. I said, every time I go to jail, my mom comes and sees me. She sits down. We're face to face. I'm making that promise, Mom, this time's going to be different. I'm going to H&I at the jail. I'm going to church. You know what I mean? I found Jesus. I turned my well life over to Jesus. I was in hook, line, and sinker in the jail. He said, really? I said, yeah, dude, I was worked out. I got weighed on. I'm in the game, man. And I'm telling my mom, man, I'm going to the Salvation Army when I get out of here. You know what I mean? And I mean it with everything in me. He said, what happened? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, as you're getting released, do you think you're still going to Salvation Army? I said, yeah, I'm still going to Salvation Army, Jack, but alcohol's not my problem. He said, kind of looked back. He said, why? What? I said, yeah, alcohol's not my problem. I said, I went to jail because I got busted with heroin. Heroin was a problem. Heroin's why I ended up back in jail. He said, oh, okay. So what'd you do? I said, well, I went to the liquor store and got a 12-pack of beer because alcohol's not a problem. And so I drink a beer and shame, guilt, remorse goes away in the middle of the second beer. I wonder what they're doing down the street. So I take a walk down the street. I meet a new friend. Before you know it, I'm back down the street, copping more dope. Before you know it, I'm back in jail. He said, what? You went back to jail? I said, yeah, the only time I ever able to stop is when I'm in jail. He said, really, what happened? I said, oh, H&I came, man. I'm in the game. I'm going to go to AA, I'm going to go to NA, I'm going to go to CA. I'm obsessed. I got every A on the list, you know what I mean? Because some are sicker than others, you know what I mean? And then I'm going to church and I find Jesus one more time and I turn my will and life over to Jesus and I'm working out. I'm in the game. I'm doing it. He said, what happened? I said, I have no idea. He said, as you're getting released, what's going on in your head? I said, well, as I'm getting released, I'm excited to get to 7-Eleven because alcohol isn't a problem, right? Crack cocaine is the reason why I ended up in jail. He said, really? What happened? So I drank. Before you know it, I'm back down the street doing the same thing. He said, man, that's insane thinking. I said, what do you mean it's insane thinking? He said, what consequences? I said, well, I was looking at 3.5 years in prison. I was on the street. I was sexually raped. He said, and you pick back up? I said, well, yeah. He said, you don't think that's insane thinking in light of the consequences that always happen to you? I was like, well, if you put it that way, I mean, geez, no one ever put it that way. He said, the only thing that's going to stand in the way of you in that first thought of that first drink is a loving God. I said, absolutely no effing way, dude. No God, dude. He's like, how about a higher power? Oh, bro, word games. I know your higher power means God. We're not doing the higher power thing. You know what I mean? And he said, okay, do you believe that I believe? Oh, okay. I believe that you believe, Jack. You know what I'm saying? And so I believe that Jack believed. And you hear all the time, well, if you believe a doorknob is good enough, just that you believe that the doorknob is God, you know, and all those little things and whatever. It is what it is. My experience is I came to believe that Jack believed. 8.5 years later, doing the 1-2-1-12 dance. You know what I'm saying? I did third step. I made amends, blah, blah. But 1-12-1-12-1-12-1-12-1-12. And what happened for me at 8.5 years of sobriety, dying of untreated alcoholism, not able to hold a relationship. My behavior was, well, I cheated on everyone. I couldn't keep friendships. I couldn't connect to another human being. I was super sponsor guy, super speaker guy, super young people committee guy, busy. Get out of self-help others. And I'm just obsessed on helping people, right? Because I got to get out of this thing because I go home every night, I want to kill myself. And so there's no 10-step promises happening in my life. None. Zero. I'm fighting everything. Dude, I'm just absolutely crazy in the rooms, you know, which, you know, people don't talk about because got to be someone around here. You know, we can't come to the meeting with time and say, hey, I'm really screwed up, you know? And so long story short, I'm going to kill myself. I'm crazy. I'm 8.5 years. I'm driving my car 100 miles an hour down the road, going to barrel my car in oncoming traffic. And I pick up the phone and I call this guy. As I'm about to make a left into the oncoming traffic, I hear a voice that says, call that guy Jonathan from your Tuesday night meeting before you kill yourself. And I called him. He was a lot older man. He was laying in bed with his wife. It was midnight. He had two high school kids that were in bed going to school. He answered the phone in one ring and I was crying. I said, I'm going to kill myself. And he said, man, I've been waiting for this call for a year. God was working in my life, though I didn't believe. He said, can you meet me at Denny's? And he drove 30 miles south and met me at Denny's. And he opened the book to page 52. Having trouble with personal relationships. Yep. Couldn't control my emotional nature. Yep. Prey to misery and depression. Yep. Couldn't seem to be of use to other people. Yep. Couldn't make a living. Yep. Prey to misery. Yep. Depressed. Yep. Had a feeling of uselessness. Yep. Full of fear. Yep. We were unhappy. Yep. He said, I want you to write at the bottom of there an insane sex life too. I said, absolutely. How'd you know? And he said, at 17 years of sobriety, I was going to kill myself. And I reached out to a man by the name of Luther Wood. And Luther Wood was dying of untreated alcoholism. And Luther Wood had met out to a man by the name of Clint Hodges. Clint Hodges was dying of untreated alcoholism, was met by a man by the name of Don Pritz. On the flyer, it says Fellowship of the Spirit. And there was power in knowing that he had been where I had been, that the man that took him had been where he had been, the guy that took him was a man. And it was this chain down the line of men that understood where men had been, where I was. There was power in that. And he looked at me and he said, you're dying of untreated alcoholism, kid. And it didn't make any sense to me. Like, I'm doing everything in AA you guys tell me to do. Help people, get on commitments, be of service, sponsor people. I'm at the Nooner. I hear the little message. You're right where you're supposed to be. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. You know what I mean? I'm dying, man. I have so much hate and so much prejudice towards God. I feel like God's in the sky to zap you, little bastard. You know what I mean? That God's up there testing me. You know what I mean? This testing, judgmental, like God that just, man. And I went back through the steps and I had to look at the powerlessness of my own thinking. Alcoholism. We hear people say alcoholism. I sponsor myself. You know what I mean? And I went back through the steps and I had to look at my prejudices towards religion. Had to look at the prejudice towards, never meeting my dad. You know, why would God do anything to a kid like that, man? Rape 12 times. Why would God have that happen to me? Living on Skid Row for a year and a half. Why? Victim. And I had to write a list of things that blocked me from God. And I wrote a list of 7 things that blocked me from God. And I said, God, please take away all of these things that stand in the way of me having a better relationship with you. And I crossed these 6 things off. And the last thing on that list was what you and Alcoholics Anonymous thought about me. My image in here, my ego, my pride in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to ask God, please take away that thing. And I remember sitting on my couch just sitting there like having such a hard time and just even letting go of that idea, letting go of that one sense of power. It was a delusion, but that sense of power, I remember going, you know what? Like, this pain is so incredibly, like, I don't care. Like, if that's what I have to do, God, that's what I had. Take it away. And I remember having a sense of freedom, man. It was just like it was taken away. And I looked at this list and I crossed it off. And the last thing on there was God. In the book, it says in the last analysis, that's where God is found. And in that moment, I knew that there was no more analysis. It was me and God. And I called my sponsor that morning. And I say, man, I'm willing to make a decision to do whatever I have to do in order to not feel this way in my life ever again. I was suicidal in the rooms from 8.5 years to 10 years of sobriety, dying of untreated alcoholism, not knowing it, thinking I'm doing everything right here and I'm dying. And I went back through the steps. I did that. I did a third step with that man. I got on my knees. He said a personal prayer to God. He turned me over to God. I started to write inventory and I was suicidal. I wouldn't sleep for 7 days at a time. I was 130 pounds. I was busy in AA, but I was dying. And he would say, Pat, how's that amends to your dad coming along? See, I had made every amends, man, to all the women I had cheated on in the rooms, all the people that I had smugged, all my friends that I just fucking just abandoned friendships, right? All of that stuff I cleaned up, and I would call him and I'd be like, man, I'm going to jump off the bridge. Like, I can't live like this anymore. This is just too crazy. And he would say, Pat, meet me at the meeting. He said, I want you to meet me at the meeting. And I would meet him at the meeting and he would say, Pat, how's it amends to your dad come along? I said, I'm not going to make it. John, then I'm not going to make it, you know? And I'd call him the next day and he'd say, meet me at the meeting. I want to say goodbye to you before you kill yourself. And I'd meet him at the meeting and you know, I'd leave and I'd meet him at the meeting and I'd meet in about a year of doing this. I just said, man, AA doesn't work, man. Just doesn't work. Everyone else seems like they're inside having an ice cream cone with God, and I'm on the outside wondering where mine is, you know? Everyone else seems to have this great relationship with God. They come to AA, oh, me and God are best friends. Grateful people are happy people. Those that aren't are. And I'm just like, I don't get it, man. There's something innately wrong with me. There's something innately been wrong with me my whole life. I'm done. So I pull my car on the bridge. I'm like, I'm jumping, dude. F this thing. I'm over it, man. I get out of the car and I walk to the front of the car and my phone rings and I answer it. And it was this guy from AA, man, this kid, Chris. And Chris was all, he's like, hey, is this Pat? I said, yeah, it's Pat. Now I'm 6 feet away from jumping off a bridge. He goes, this is Chris. I met you at a meeting. And you know what, Pat, I want to thank you because you really helped me. But I wanted to say goodbye to you before I go and drink. I said, oh, no, Chris, we don't drink one day at a time here in AA, bro. I'm on the bridge and I start 12-stepping this guy. I came to realize it was 7 o'clock. There was a meeting starting and I told Chris to meet me at the meeting. I met him at the meeting and Chris asked me to sponsor him. I don't know how God works in your life, but God saved my life by putting Chris in my life. He asked me to sponsor him. I took him through. I started reading the book with him 2 months later. That kid overdosed and died. And I sit in my living room. I don't believe that some of us have to die for some of us to make it. I don't believe in that saying. But that night I went home. And I'm on my couch and I'm like, God, I don't understand. Like, I want to die, and I don't understand why he put Chris in my life, and I don't understand why he asked me to sponsor him. I don't understand why I have to live with this misery. And I heard my sponsor's voice say, you need to make amends to your dad. I just said, God, I started making amends to my dad. I don't have a part in that relationship. My mom got pregnant in a blackout. I'll never know who my dad is. But I had built these beliefs as a little kid that I wasn't lovable. It's all my dad's fault that I don't have friends. It's all my dad's fault I don't know how to have relationships with women. It's my dad's fault why. It's my dad's fault this. It's my dad's fault that. And that old idea, which the book says we have to let go absolutely, or the results were nil to let go. That old idea, sitting with in that moment, I start praying. I'm like, God, give me the strength. And all of a sudden, I start making amends to a man I've never met. And what happened for me on that floor of my apartment that day was the power. It was like a negative, evil power was pulled right outside of me. And that God that I came to find out into, that God of love, went deep down within. I got off the floor that day and went in my bedroom and I passed out just like that. When that last amend was made, the promises of the 10th step came true. We read the ninth step promises all the time. But it says that we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. Now, I didn't know it at that time. This is my story in retrospect. I didn't know it at the time that sanity had returned in that moment. I didn't know that I had ceased fighting anything or anyone. This is me looking back. If tempted, we recoil from a hot flame. We will react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see how our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest in our laurels. We're headed for... Did I get cut off? My phone rang. Sorry about that. It says it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest in our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. So now I'm placed in a position where I'm absolutely 100% free. And the 10th step, I'm a big book guy. I'm not a 12 and 12 guy. I'm a big book guy. So if you go through the 12 and 12 and your sponsor, keep going that route. Like, that's awesome. Like, this is my experience. It says, continue to watch. Well, let me back up. It says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to write any new mistakes as we go along. As we go along, we vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the path. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. For so long, I would go to therapists and they would talk to me and they would say, "What does little Pat think about that?" The 10th step and the 11th step for me is a process of understanding the spirit within myself. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual healer. It's a healing process with my physical and my spiritual. The longest journey I go from is from my head to my heart. It's 8 inches. It's the most painful thing. I've had to go from judgment to compassion. Judgment from you to compassion, judgment of self to compassion of self. And that journey is going within. We have entered the world of spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So what I do is I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, which means I'm going to get resentful, which means I'm going to be selfish, which means I'm going to be dishonest, which means I am going to be afraid. Because I am a human being. The first thing I do is that I ask God to remove them. Then I discuss with someone immediately, and I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And I'm going to give you a few examples of 10 step for me. This is the one we're going to tell. This one's coming to spirit. So I go from Skid Row to a six-figure income. I'm running this business. I built it from the ground up. I'm building this business, right? Ninth grade education, six figures. Running this business, built it from the ground up. All of a sudden, they decided to hire some guy that, well, my perception was replacing me. So I get afraid. Then I catch a resentment. I don't know how you deal when you're selfish, but I build a case on him. And then I get like a little, what I call campfire. You know, when you sit around the campfire and you talk, oh my God, that guy's such a bad guy. Dude, did you see what he did? Oh my God. And I build this little team around me. Because it's easy to be resentful and selfish when you got a crew of people who are like, yeah, you're right, justifying, 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 right? And I got the whole crew. Pretty soon I got the whole team on my side. And we're in the staff meeting, and we're sitting there, and he's at the other end of the table down there, and I'm over here on my throne of, just ha, 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 you know? And all of a sudden, I decide to send a text message to my friend because I was like, dude, did you just see what that guy is? Incompetent. He's a loser. Did you see how he just totally flopped right now? And my friend is literally sitting right next to me. His phone is right there. And I'm like, okay, the phone isn't lighting up. And I'm like looking at my friend. I'm like, and then I think, oh, I better go. And I turn down the table to where the guy is at that I just talked dirt on. And he's looking at his phone. And I sent him the text that I was to send my friend. And the guy's face was red. Now, he's in recovery too, right? And I'm like, oh, my God, right? I just sunk in my chair. Because I had been trained... My feet were trained to understand when these crop up, which means now. And so I was like, I said a prayer. I said, oh my God, God, I feel horrible. I had returned to spec, right? I had entered the world of spirit, that consciousness that, oh my God, really? Oh my God. And so I sent him a text and says, dude, I got to make amends. You know what I mean? Like, and he sends me a text back. He's like, I do not want your effing amends, string of F bombs. and I call my sponsor, and my sponsor says, wow, you really screwed this one up, didn't you? And he said, I want you to turn your thoughts and attentions to someone you can help. And so I turned my thoughts and my attentions to some new guys. And what happened was I had to go back to my sponsor a couple of days later because I was just having a hard time, and he said, okay, so you can make it a living amends. He said, tell me about this guy. He's a military guy. And he said, what time do you get to work? I said, I get to work at 7:30. What time does he get there? He said, gets there at 8. He's like, okay, perfect. He said, I want you to stand outside 15 minutes before he gets there every day. And when he comes walking into the office, I want you to say, put your hand out and say, good morning. I hope you have a good day, sir. And I was like, dude, are you kidding me? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. So for 6 months, boom, I'm standing there. 3 months in, he's like, good morning, sir. Nice to see you. And he'd walk. Fast forward 6 months later, he's about to get fired. And he calls me. He says, hey, Pat. He's like, he's like, can you come into my office? And the guy's in tears. You know what I mean? And he's like, I just want to thank you for what you demonstrated to me over the last 6 months. He said, you're forgiven. And he said, we just sit and listen. And I just sat and I allowed him to have the space that he needed to express his fears and his anger, his resentment, his selfish, you know, all of his crazy thoughts. And one more time, what happens is that I heal. One more time, my judgment of someone or something turns to compassion. Because I sat within the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 months doing what I had to do long enough, that judgment went away. And this whole COVID thing, I think I talked for like 10 minutes. I don't know how much longer I'm talking. This whole COVID thing hits, right? You know what I mean? It's like my business, what I do for work is on the road. Like I'm flying. I'm gonna have to go meet people. I'm in meetings with other people everywhere. And when this thing hit, man, I was like, dude, I was like, no meetings, right? Like meeting makers make it, you know what I mean? No meetings, sorry. You know what I mean? 3 days in, I'm like crazy. Like, yeah, I didn't know that there was a dependency on meetings. I didn't know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that saying, like, you have to meet your sponsor face-to-face. Well, you're not doing that no more, you know what I mean? And all these things, right? All these old ideas. And I got scared, man. I was like, dude, scared. There's no way, A, I'm going to lose my job, right? Because I don't know about you, but I'm a worst case scenario kind of guy. I mean, I'm like, and I'm afraid. Now I'm waking up every morning doing the 11 step out of the book. We are undisciplined. I mean, my meditation in the morning is disciplined every day for it's about 45 minutes to an hour every morning. And I'm disciplined and I'm hand in hand with God. I'm like super spiritual, but I get afraid, you know, just because I'm a human being, I get scared, you know? And so I'm all centered, one with the power, you know? And then all of a sudden, an hour later, I'm on my couch terrified, you know what I mean? And I'm watching the news and I'm flipping through Facebook and I'm pushing things I shouldn't push and I'm commenting where I shouldn't comment and I'm completely acting selfishly. I'm completely, out my neck, you know what I mean? And 3 days in, man, I'm like, dude, on my couch, terrified, shutting down. Had entered the world of the spirit. I no longer can live that way of life for the long term that I had been able to live previous. I mean, last campaign, I roared and rip roared for months and months. I don't care about anyone. I had learned some hard lessons through that, right? But now it's 3 days, man, 3 days. And because of the daily discipline of focusing on breath, discontinued thought, focusing on breath, discontinuing thought, I'm laying on my couch, I'm terrified, I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to lose everything. And all of a sudden, I have a voice that says, you need to help others, Pat. And I looked at my fear to continue to watch for fear. I looked at my fear. My fear was that I was afraid of losing my job, losing my apartment. If I have no money, then I lose my apartment. If I have no money, then I lose my car. If I have no car, I lose my... And all of a sudden, my 13-year-old son is looking at me like the worst dad in the world. You're a loser. Now he leaves. All my friends are like, dude, I'm afraid of what other people think of me. I'm afraid of being alone. Really, I'm afraid that there is no God. And I tell God all these fears, and I go, God, what would you have me be? And I heard that voice again that said, you need to be of service. And I said, God, what can I do to be of service? And all of a sudden I had this idea that all the people in my meetings are older and maybe I can get all the Zoom meetings together where they don't know how. And I started to get Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting together. I started letting all my people in my fellowship know, here's the meetings. People are asking me where the, and all of a sudden, like I was out of the fear. All of a sudden, I'm back in the spirit. I'm like, hey, COVID ain't got nothing on this, man. I got this thing down, you know? And I'm out there, and I'm being a service in AA, and I'm staying quarantined, and I got all these art projects, and I'm getting closer to my son, and, like, so many good benefits. We're cooking, you know, all this good stuff is coming. And I was like, well, I wonder what Facebook's doing today. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. If it happens on Facebook, it's real. You know what I mean? All of a sudden. Oh my God, down the rabbit hole I go again, but I mean, I'm still disciplined. I'm still doing the meditation. I'm still helping people, right? But I can go down that rabbit hole just like that. And before I'm back, you know, now it's like a day and a half. 3 days goes to a day and a half. I'm on the couch. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm going to die. I'm going to lose the house. Same scenario. I'm a human being with human emotions. I no longer have a God of intellect that intellectualizes my way out. A belief, one more time, from an intellect to a belief, which is within. And I'm on the couch and I'm like, oh my God, okay, God, I'm terrified of being alone. I'm terrified of losing, I'm losing all these things. And it becomes natural. Just, I said, God, what would you have me be? I said, I don't understand, God, what's going on in the world? I don't. And I flashed, my whole sobriety flashed. And I remember when I had that six-figure job, eventually I was fired from that job. And I was going to lose everything, worst case scenario. What happened was I got a nicer apartment, I got a nicer car, I got a nicer job. I found some business partners, we built a business. I had arrived 2 years later, I was fired, pushed out of that partnership. I was worst case scenario, gonna lose the job, all of a sudden I got a nicer apartment, nicer car. January 10th, my mom died. The attorney that settled the case ripped me off for the settlement. Nicer apartment, nicer car, but more importantly, peace of mind, happiness, joy on the inside. I came to learn that my whole life I felt like I was afraid, and a lot of the times I was just excited about life. My fear today has shifted from fear to excitement of the next adventure. And I came to realize in that moment that all of that stuff that I had gone through my whole sobriety was leading me up to that point that God had built the character in that moment. God had taken all that pain of all the broken relationships and all that behavior and going through the steps and finding a God of love to that pain of being on the floor, making that amends to my dad when that power of love went deep down within. And I'm on the couch and God says to me, Pat, you are love. You are light. And I want you to go out in the world and give that world that love and that light. Go be the love and the light amongst the darkness of the world. Because I've been taught to practice the principles in all my affairs, because I was taught that I might be the only big book that someone might see, that when I leave my house, I ask people how they're doing. When I leave my house and I see a neighbor, I ask her if I can carry her groceries. When I leave the house, I'm love and light amongst, I've been taught that, I've been doing that, I put the cart back, all those little things. That day I got off the couch and I went outside and the neighbor said, I have to take one of my kids to the hospital and we can't take the other one. He said, I don't know you personally, but you're always kind to me. And I don't know what else to do, but can you watch my kid, my other kid, while we go to the hospital? I said, absolutely. Alcoholics Anonymous, the process of the 12 steps, the 10th step. It's a lot more than not drinking alcohol and doing drugs. The 10th step for me is a powerful tool to help me grow up. 10, 11, and 12, powerful tools for me to grow up. Up until the point before I talked, we cleaned house. We cleaned house. We cleaned that resentment away. We cleaned that shame away. We cleaned that guilt away. We got a relationship with God, and now we're placed in a position to continue to grow, to be the best person that God wants me to be. If you're new here, my message today is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And it's my prayer every night when I go to bed that if you're new or you're struggling, that you find a sponsor, you find somebody that cares more about your life than the way you feel. My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Pat. Wow, that was so powerful. Whew. Okay, let's take a moment of silence and close this meeting for the still suffering alcoholic, both in and outside of these rooms, and end with the we version of the Serenity Prayer. May we have that moment now. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Pat. It's always a pleasure and a joy to hear you. And you always just seem to touch home. Thank you.
Thank you very much.